Thank you, Leonard. Happy to be with you.
I'm happy to be here, and I'm prepared to laugh, so I think it's going to be fun.
Yes, I can hear it in your voice. I already hear you're laughing. Me too.
There you go. Let's invite our listeners to laugh with us today. And if you would like to participate in the show with your questions or comments, you can call 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Ask your international operator to reverse the charges. You can also email us your thoughts at healthchat@voanews.com or post your questions or comments on facebook.com/healthchat. We will discuss laughter therapy in a moment, but first, listen to this.
Sadie Delaney, one of two New York sisters who lived past age 100 and wrote a book about their lives, said, "Life is short, and it's up to us to make it sweet." That quote stuck with Charles Schaefer, a psychology professor at Fairleigh Dickinson University in New Jersey. He had already written about love, happiness, and play therapy as the road to positive life changes, and he had read several studies showing the therapeutic effects of laughter. But it was always laughter induced by humor, like a clown's antics or a comedian's routine. What would happen, he wondered, if you made yourself laugh for no apparent reason? Not a tasteful chuckle, a long, deep belly laugh. So he put the idea to the test with his students.
We had them laugh hysterically for a minute. They rated their mood before and after this experiment, and we found, kind of to our surprise, that it did elevate their mood, much as the literature showed that humor-induced laughter cheers people up.
So far, so good. But many questions remained. Was it the surreal scene, a classroom full of young adults laughing uproariously, that made people feel better? Or was it the physical act of laughing itself? Would a more subtle experience, like smiling for a full minute, have the same effect? How about the other extreme, like a full wolf-like howl? Professor Schaefer asked a Fairleigh Dickinson graduate student, Charles Newhoff, to demonstrate all three, the broad smile, the prolonged and jolly laugh, and the full-throated howl. Then he instructed the students to try them all in private, away from the influence of their classmates. Already this was an astonishing break in routine for the psychology students, made all the more bizarre by Mr. Newhoff. There he was, a man so serious that Professor Schaefer calls him austere, standing before them and howling at the top of his lungs.
I'll do it for you right now, if you'd like.
Sure, demonstrate for me.
Okay, it's much more effective when you see someone doing it. You know, they'll pull the head back and giving that, letting it all out, all the tension. You know, that's what the howling is about.
Are there long-lasting benefits from a good laugh? For now, Professor Schaefer and even his austere assistant, Mr. Newhoff, urge people to give spontaneous smiles and laughter a try. If you're too embarrassed to be seen roaring with laughter for no apparent reason, they say, close the office door or roll up the car window and let her rip.
Sounds strange now to sit by yourself and laugh. I can't say I do this on a daily basis, but at times, just to sit and laugh a little bit, and it really does lift the mood, and it stays with you, that improved mood. So I would just encourage everyone just to give it a try once or twice and see for themselves how powerful this stuff is.
Laughter does sweeten life, Charles Newhoff and his Laugh-A-Minute mentor are convinced. And they point to a comment by the late Danish pianist and comedian Victor Borge. Laughter is the shortest distance between two people.
And Mr. Wilson, a very interesting report, I have to say. That was Ted Langfair reporting. Welcome to the show again. It's fascinating to me to hear that there is actually some benefit to laughing. I'm known to be someone who likes to laugh, but I've never realized that there was actually some benefit to it. So tell us a little more about that. What is this all about?
You know, when I was a very little boy, I discovered that I could tell jokes. And that's an unusual talent. Very few people can hear a joke and then tell it well. So my life has always been involved with jokes and laughter. And then I, you know, that was a sort of a side thing with me. I knew that I liked it when people laughed. I liked when I laughed. And then I became a psychologist. That's my professional training, and a psychotherapist. And I began to discover that there was some evidence and some research about a human being having a sense of humor and a human being having the ability to laugh. Laughing is a physical act, and it's quite remarkable in a few ways. One is that human beings, even people who are born blind and deaf, will laugh. So this helps us to believe, and it's been verified, that laughter is not something that we learn how to do from seeing other people do it or hearing other people do it.
That's true.
Although if you can see it and hear it, there is a way in which it is contagious, and one person can pass an emotion like laughter to another under the right circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But it's inborn. The part of the brain and the central nervous system that allows us or controls laughing and smiling is there at birth in human infants. And we don't have to learn that from other people. But we only show that behavior under certain conditions as infants, even at 3 or 4 or 5 weeks of age. But an infant has to be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
A sick child doesn't laugh. An infant has to be comfortable. An infant, and you can say also, and you see as an adult, in pain, very difficult to laugh. If you're starving, if you're hungry, if you don't know where your next meal is coming from, very difficult to laugh. If you are living in chaos and confusion, or fear, if bombs are going off in your neighborhood, very difficult to laugh. So there are certain conditions that make human beings feel like laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns out that when we are amused, this is an emotional state, being amused, whatever it is that might amuse you, and then the laughter starts, the brain produces a flood of chemicals. Somebody called it a tsunami of wonderful chemicals, hormones, things that are called neurotransmitters. Your brain is bathed in these chemicals that then send signals to every part of your body. Every system in your body begins to operate in its healthy way, whether it's the digestive system or the cardiovascular system or the immune system or the muscular system or the endocrine system. All of these things in the body are activated in a healthy way with laughter.
So you mentioned that when someone, for example, a child is starving, he doesn't laugh. When an adult is sick, it's hard to laugh. So does this mean that if, let's say, an adult who is sick has the ability or finds the ability to laugh, then his condition may improve, or is it the ease to cope with that condition that is more of the benefit from laughing?
In my development of a laughter therapy technique, I felt it was very important to be very careful not to make claims that laughter cures anything.
Okay.
Laughter, amusement, good-natured humor, rather than, there's no evidence that any of that cures any particular ailment or illness, but it does create a psychological and perhaps a physiological environment within the human being, in that person, that makes healing possible, makes it more likely. So laughter therapy is not a primary treatment. It is what we call an adjunctive treatment. So whatever you are in treatment for, cancer, fibromyalgia, you had surgery, you know, any condition, you had a broken bone, it doesn't matter. Anything that you're healing with has a primary treatment. And the doctor knows that the patient will do better if they're calm,
mm-hmm.
if they are confident, if they are optimistic, if they're in a good mood.
Mm-hmm.
If the patient is depressed, fearful, angry, not trusting, pessimistic, that patient will not do well, sometimes no matter how good the primary treatment is. So we want to have a mood and an attitude that supports healing, and perhaps we are influencing, we know, the biology that can help healing to happen. And laughter and humor seem to do that, and it's remarkable.
So it's the idea of staying positive in general. I know that a lot of time when people go through hurdles and challenges, one of the things you will hear is keep your spirit up, stay positive.
That's right.
So it's all within that same type of approach, I guess.
That's right. That's right. One of the people who led the way in modern times, and I say that because the idea of laughter and attitude, what you're talking about being important, is ancient.
Okay.
Even thousands of years ago, in the book of Proverbs in the Old Testament, it was written, "A merry heart does good like a medicine." And from that we say laughter is the best medicine. But this is ancient wisdom. But the person in modern times who began to lead the way of this thinking was a man named Norman Cousins, a brilliant man, a great humanitarian, an ambassador of goodwill for the United States, and a very literate man, but he loved jokes and humor. And when he was struck with an illness for which there was no known treatment, it's called ankylosing spondylitis. It's a very painful disease.
It sounds painful.
And it affects every cell in the body, and nobody knew what to do. And he was in the hospital. He was very depressed. He was in pain.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, at least maybe I could try to distract myself with humor. So he had books. His favorite funny authors would be brought in. If he couldn't sleep, a nurse would read something to him. And he wrote in his book that 10 minutes of hearty laughter would allow him to have 2 hours of sleep without pain.
Wow.
Yeah. And so he brought in a movie projector, and they were showing the Three Stooges and Laurel and Hardy and the Marx Brothers movies and things that he liked. And eventually the people, the hospital administration said, "You're making too much noise, and we can't have that."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Well, you're not giving me any treatment anyway, so I'm moving out of the hospital." And he moved into a hotel. He said the food was better and the rates were cheaper. You could make all the noise you want. And he continued to self-prescribe humor because he liked the effects he was getting. And he also took massive doses of vitamin C. That has to be in there. But his disease went into remission.
Hmm.
And he wrote a book about it, and he eventually was made adjunct faculty on the medical school at the University of California in Los Angeles. And he raised millions of dollars to begin the scientific study of what happens when we laugh.
Wow.
But he said, "Please don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I think laughter and humor are wonderful, and we're going to study that." But his belief was that all of the pleasant emotions, all of the positive emotions, are going to be of great good value to human beings. And he had a list. And on that list were things like love, support, understanding, festivity, celebration, sense of purpose, determination, optimism, the will to live. He said all of these emotions, we have to create environments that bring in all of these emotions, and laughter and humor. And it's turning out now over the years that he was exactly right. And, you know, human beings need all of those things. So that's, you know, a person can be diagnosed with some condition for which there is no known treatment or very slim odds, like Norman Cousins. And they can survive. They beat the odds.
Yeah.
And there are other people who are diagnosed with something for which there is a treatment, but they give up the will to live.
They
lose hope, and they die in spite of the fact that treatment was available. So our outlook is extraordinarily important. And if we can give ourselves permission and cultivate the appreciation for laughter, then that would be great. You see, laughter is wonderful, but it's been put into a little box by a lot of people.
And we'll talk more about that. We do have a caller, and I wanted to give him a chance to ask his question, Mr. Wilson.
Certainly.
So, Patrick from Nigeria, welcome to Health Chat.
Good evening, ma. Good evening, doctor.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah, doctor, I want to find out. You see, here there is discussion sometimes when we talk to doctor, people will tell you that if you are stressed, that you should go to all this program they normally do, this comedians show, where you get yourself happy. That is be laughing. That's when one is tensed up or stressed. Now such things, such comedian programs where you go and where they are will be laughing, that will reduce stress and other things. So I don't know how truthful is such a statement.
That's a very good question.
Yes, I think I understand the question.
Yeah.
Two ways that the topic of today has an important relationship to stress. One is that humor, which is a psychological perspective. See, humor is a way of looking at things from a different perspective, and maybe you see the lighter side of something. Every situation has many sides. Whatever happens, there's a financial implication, there's a spiritual implication, a family side, a health side, a financial side. And maybe as you look at all sides, you find a way to look at it in which it's a little bit less serious. And there, some humor can come to the situation. And it shifts your perspective, and you look at it, maybe not entirely as bad as I thought. But then laughter is the physical act that accompanies humor, and it can happen on its own anyway. And as we look at what we know about the physiology of laughter, we see a reduction in the stress chemistry in the body. There's definite research, and anybody can contact me at my email, and I will share the research. Dr. Lee Burke at Loma Linda University in California.
And your email?
Email steve@worldlaughtertour.com.
Great.
And Dr. Burke is a psychoneuroimmunologist. He did some of the earliest studies and continues remarkable studies about emotions and health. And it's very clear studies that laughter reduces the presence of stress hormones, which are the existence of stress hormones in the bloodstream and throughout the body for too long of a period of time or in too great intensity. That's what leads to and contributes to other illnesses, arthritis, pain, muscular tension. So you want to reduce those as fast as you can. It turns out that laughter does that. Now, the laughter that does that is what's called true mirthful laughter.
I was going to ask if there is a specific type of laughter, because he talked about going to the comedy show, the type of
laughter that it would have.
That...
You are, again, as I said earlier, if you are truly amused.
Okay.
If you are, I can't sit here and go, ha, 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 ha. And that doesn't change anything.
Okay.
I have to feel the emotion of amusement.
Okay.
Something is tickling me inside, however you want to put it. But with mirth, that's another word for that amusement. When you are amused, and then you give yourself over, let yourself have the laughter that goes with that. It's spontaneous. It's unplanned. It erupts out of you. Sometimes something strikes you funny in an instant, and you find yourself laughing totally unplanned.
Yeah.
That's the best. When that's happening, your body, your brain chemistry, and your body chemistry is getting very healthy. And it's one of the things is specifically reducing the stress hormones, such as cortisol. I won't go into all the technical details, but I'd be happy to share that, and that's very important. And the problem that we have, Leonard, is that many people and many places put laughter in a box and lock it up and say it's only for children, or it's very immature, or it's trivial. It's not to be taken seriously. Hard
silly.
Work is the thing, and dedication and devotion and introspection, and, you know, and that's wrong. We have to unlock that box. That's what my work has become about since the last 30 years or so. But unlock the box. Laughter is wonderful. Now, there are some cultures that we know of. We know of a Native American culture where they appreciate laughter so much that when the infant has its first laugh, they have a festival, they have a celebration, they have a feast.
That's interesting.
And the adult who's with the baby when the baby laughs the first time becomes the laughing godparent for the child. Because what they know, even though they didn't have the science of the laboratory to prove it, but what they knew is that when that infant laughs, that infant is healthy, that infant is comfortable, that infant is secure, that infant is not worried about being fed. I mean, all it says, hey, this kid is healthy and happy. Let's celebrate. This is wonderful.
Yeah, so maybe it raises the question. It's not a very, well, this is just me thinking. You talked about an infant laughing for the first time. Wouldn't it be even better if the first thing that a child does, a baby does, is laughing instead of crying? But that's another story, I guess.
Well, laughing and crying are not opposites in this regard.
Let me
say this, that we need to do both. There's a reason, there's a very good reason why people cry, and there's a very good reason why people laugh, and we shouldn't shut them up either way.
Okay.
You know, there's a time to cry and there's a time to laugh. And they both discharge emotional tension, which we need to do. Both laughing and crying do that. They both are self-limiting behaviors. So when you cry till you're done. When you laugh, you laugh till you're done. Nobody has to stop you. But if we make people self-conscious, if we make them feel bad or guilty that they shouldn't laugh or they shouldn't cry, then they get all tied up in knots emotionally.
Okay. I have Camila in Uganda. Her question is, how do you make yourself laugh when sometimes things are very difficult? Is there a mechanism?
You can cultivate it is possible to understand laughter and appreciate laughter in a way that you know that it's good for you, and so you try to discover the ways that you personally can access it. Like you said, maybe a funny television show, maybe a comedy club, maybe jokes, maybe just learning how to laugh. And I'll give you a quick exercise on how to do that here in a moment.
Okay.
But it's not always necessary, because sadness and grief, and these are part of life, and they have to be managed as well, but not with laughter.
Okay.
So it would not, you know, my work about laughter, I think, is very important, and I'm very happy with how it's spreading around the world. But we're not telling people that no matter what happens, if you laugh, it'll be okay. That's ridiculous. That's naive.
Okay.
Sometimes you need to cry, and sometimes you need to just be with friends. But if you can get the distraction that laughter gives you, even if it's a few moments, you know, that can be very, very worthwhile.
Okay. Now, what is there such a thing as a good laugh? I know people use that expression.
I think so. But it's personal. It's what's a good laugh for you.
Okay.
And so many times we laugh and we are caught up in the laughter. And when we're finished, we're maybe even breathing heavily and we're saying, I needed that.
Yes.
Yeah. So
yes.
That was a good laugh for you.
Okay.
But chuckling or giggling or you know, big laugh, little laugh, it's very individual. And it may change from situation to situation, even with the same person. There's no universally good laugh.
Is there a common thread, though, such as a spontaneity? Does it have to be spontaneous? Is it better when it's spontaneous, or I don't know. I'm just trying to.
Ultimately, it has to be It has to be mirthful and from amusement. Yes, you cannot fake laughing and get a benefit. A French scientist discovered this in the 1800s. His name is Duchenne. I think it's Guillard Duchenne, but and so we actually have a kind of a laughter that we call Duchenne laughter, named for him. It's spontaneous, and it erupts without plan. He said that is the best kind. He thought that was the most healthful kind of laughter. But if you say, oh, boss, you tell the best jokes, ha, 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 we really like your jokes, that's facetious, that's sarcastic, that's not genuine amused laughter.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to produce these results that science is showing.
Mm-hmm. So when we think about laughing therapy, I know that you have trained some people in Africa, a couple in Africa, and it seems to be spreading. In general, people say that Africans, although we don't want to generalize, but Africans like to laugh. They laugh more naturally. When you were working with the people in Africa, what did you find in terms of the most fundamental thing that they had to understand? Because some people may think that, as you mentioned, it's a bit silly or it's not really real.
We want to get across the idea that all human beings laugh. All infants, if they're healthy at birth, people will laugh. Then what happens is in different cultures, there are different ideas of what's funny or what's appropriate.
Yes.
The whole idea is to appreciate laughter, to embrace laughter.
Okay, Mr. Wilson, and we do need to laugh out loud, I guess. And thank you so much for joining us. That's all the time we have for today. It was great to speak with you.
My pleasure. Anytime. Keep laughing.
Yes, indeed. And that was psychologist Steve Wilson, chairman of the board of the director of the National Humor Month here in the United States. Yes, there is a National Humor Month here in the United States. Reminder that you can join our conversation by calling 202-619-3111 next time. Until then, I'm Lino Imudu, your host in Washington, D.C., with producer Jackson Vugani. Until next time, take care. Be well and strive to make every day a healthy day.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 1730 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.